Hello, everyone, and welcome to QT Pop Talks. This is your host, Owl Rare. And for tonight's segment, I have the pleasure of interviewing Jay. Jay, tell us some more about you. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, and I am just doing my very best in these trying times.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now, and we all just have to try to do our best. And I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast right now during quarantine and everything. We both are actually in hot spots. Jay, you're in Brooklyn, however, right? I'm in Philadelphia.
Yeah, in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm specifically in Bed-Stuy, which is one of the neighborhoods that has a quite a high level of like alert, like it's orange.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's as close you can get before you get like, I don't know, don't ever leave your house status.
Yeah, it's in Philly. I live in West Philadelphia, and all of the hospitals are over here, so it's kind of the same. We're like in the orange. But we don't know if it's because everyone's coming over here to get tested or if it's because, you know, it's a bad area to be in. So, yeah, it's a confusing time, and I've been trying to cope, I guess, with just, like, you know, minimal walks when I can. And thankfully, I feel like living in Brooklyn is easier for sure than living in Manhattan, I think, just because it's probably a little bit easier to get around and stuff. There's probably not as many people. But yeah, how's your experience like getting around and stuff?
It's been much easier because where I'm in Bed-Stuy at the very least, it's very like residential, so it's very tree lined, lots of bigger open spaces, so it's not as congested. And it's not as congested as I know parts of East Flash, a bunch of people are just being really careful because of the way the parking is, etc. With Bed-Stuy, it's kind of lined up with like nice trees and everything, so it's nice to be able to go outside and take a walk and do that. And especially with Brooklyn, there's a lot of rooftops. Legal or not, I don't care. You can go up and get some air and like at least feel like you're going somewhere or doing something. And it has been really nice to have that right now, because I can't imagine living in Manhattan where you can't even like go downstairs because you're gonna get too close to people because of the stairway.
Yeah, I was really, and I still am very concerned for folks that live in like very populated parts of the city or parts of their town or city. Just because, yeah, we're trying to avoid people, and it can be hard. It just kind of happened overnight. And so I wanted to kind of, I guess, touch base more on, I guess, like the art and things that you've been working on during this time. If there's been any art that you've been working on, or like, what have you been working on?
So during this time, I actually did the thing where I burned myself out on my own accord, but then now I'm trying to recover because I'm not being very nice to myself. I was working on quite a lot of poems and like kind of trying to figure out all the stuff that I've been writing and like figure out what to do with that in terms of putting that into perspective with what's going on now. Like all the unfinished pieces and having the coronavirus twist added at the end or something to that extent. But aside from that, I've just been really trying to get back into more of what's going on sonically, especially with the quiet. Obviously, the Brooklyn, New York City in general has never been as like almost suburban quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I've actually gotten more into experimenting with sound. And I have a partner who does music and is very much into that. So I started picking up more on finishing like a concept I had in my head of like more ambient sounds and like actual music. Like I'm a big fan of like hard techno styles, etc. So now I'm just adding that onto that art form that I'm like dipping myself into for the first time. I didn't work myself into, but like really dipping my toe into for the first time. Especially now since we're so used to like the amount of sounds and lights going on, certain kinds of stimulation, not having that put that into perspective. So now with that going on, I find myself like going towards something that sounds really busy or really like really not clean sounding, but something that sounds really like almost like chaotic rhythmic, the way that New York City usually has. Like, there's a lot going on all the time, but there's like a certain kind of like rhythm to it if you really find it. Like the way that you can, like, the trucks go by and all the stuff. Like, I've been doing more of that as a result of the coronavirus. It puts a lot of perspective into that too. And one thing I haven't been able to do for a long time too, is just kind of just vocalize and go with it, because it's so loud and I'm like, there's better singers or better, you know, whatever's going on. So I've found myself like exploring and re-exploring some of the old music I used to like and singing some maybe not great pop songs from the 80s and just kind of enjoying that, because now that's the stimulation instead of like the usual stuff that's happening, you know, the usual cookouts and barbecues that are happening like right now in May. Like, there's none of that going on. There's fewer like dancing club stuff happening or rooftop parties happening because it's gotten so warm. So now I'm gonna make my own playlist.
Wow. That's really awesome that you found a way to, you know, continue to, you know, be creative and jump into and tap into artistic ability even during, you know, these trying times. And I think that for me too, you know, at first it was really hard and I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, everything's changed because I had, you know, I'm mostly a gig worker, so I don't really, like, I applied for unemployment. They're like, haha. And I was like, So it's like very confusing and, you know, kind of, I also though feel that as a person of color, that we have been through a lot. And so when we go through things like this, it's kind of just like, okay, like, we're going to figure this out. We just have to, you know, like, we kind of have like a lot of tools for survival just naturally. And so I've noticed that a lot of people who don't have these tools for survival, a lot of people who are used to just living comfortably, those are the people who are like out there protesting. Those are the people that are out there like, in this, we can't take this. Oh my God. And like,
yeah.
Are we ever going to get out of this because we want to make them comfortable, you know? And
right.
It's crazy, but, you know, I'm from Long Island, like I said, or I grew up there at least. And I just read recently, like, there's a whole bunch of people out there, and I don't like disbelieve it either, because Long Island's crazy, but there's people out there just protesting and, oh, end this, end it, like, blah, blah, blah. We gotta save the economy, and I'm just like, yeah, well, if we don't have people, then we won't have an economy, so.
Yeah. Right, we can always rebuild. We can always rebuild an economy with a population that is willing to rebuild the economy when it's safe to do so. But again, history repeats itself for those who don't know that. That is what happened during the Great Depression, was that people banded together to get back on track after, you know, 1929 like market crash, after a lot of things that happened shouldn't have, and people had to band together and find their own communities to do that. And in the 30s, like, the first time in history we've seen more things like that were like made in the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. People were like actually banding together and putting that into the lingo and making that part of the culture. Like, some of the best things in terms of like art have come out during times of the highest amount of like pressure. Like, again, in the 30s, Wizard of Oz came out, and that's a classic film, and that was something that gave people hope. And not only that, like, even decades now afterwards, it gave people like a sense of imagination beyond what is already there and beyond the picket fence. And for us, a lot of people of color, people who are marginalized, et cetera, we have known that is our story from the very beginning, whether that's like financial, whether that's just like prejudice, whether that's something about you that puts you at a distance, that puts you over the picket fence. Mm-hmm. And then when you look beyond that, you know, there's something more. And for us, we've always known that there has to be something more. At least we want to, you know, climb over the fence to see for ourselves, rather than just, you know, being more complacent about it, I guess. Like, a lot of POC, they're not having the best time, but they're still here and they're still fighting. And it's hard. It absolutely is. And I see that. But as somebody who's part of that community, I'm the one also rooting people, and they're rooting for me to go forward and letting, you know, everybody know that's in the same position, that the world needs us and that we can't give up, and, you know, we are important, even if the world tells us that we're not, that we are important and that the world needs us. The world needs you.
Yeah, that is a really good mantra. The world needs us. It does. And it's seen in so many different, you know, leaders and so many different people that have, you know, been around. They've kind of changed the world in, like, a negative way. And then you have, you know, the people like us who have, like, changed the world in positive ways, but we don't really get recognition until, like, we're dead or we, like, you know, are martyred. So it's just, like, really weird to see. And I was talking to someone about this, too, like, you know, like, how Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, they both were, like, radical speaking about, like, just how to change things, and they're killed. And then you have people like Trump, you know, and then you have all these white people kind of before Trump, too, that have been, like, messing with the world, fucking with the world. And what happens to them? You know, they're, like, highly protected, highly regarded, so America's is a very scary place to be, but I think that, you know, us queer people in America, we are helping, you know, to keep America going in that direction that it needs to go in, which I think is, you know, opening up to more love. And I think that, yeah, I think that a lot of other countries kind of already are getting that, and I think that, or I've already gotten that, and I think that we just are on our way to, you know, learning that, and it's a tough patch. Yeah. It's a tough, yeah.
Yeah, and especially since now we're adding on to the lingo that we exist in spaces like this. And yeah, it's been copped by people and used inappropriately, but we're adding to the lingo the aspects of mental health that are important. And being able to, like, you know, stay grounded, or, like, checking in, or, like, enforcing boundaries, you know, things like that. This has become part of the lingo. And they are important. And, yeah, it may be misappropriated, but, again, it's still part of the lingo, which means that it becomes the person's choice to use this in a productive way or not. To ask friends, family, et cetera, you know, what are your boundaries right now, especially since not everyone's doing it. Do you want me to check in? Do you not want to check in? You know, et cetera, like, that things like that have been really pulling people through, and now I'm happy to see that actually being used in a good way, because I've seen so much good being done with all of this in tow. Like, people are at least the people who are willingly trying to be nice are doing so in a way that's a lot more nuanced to the person, and that's really great. Instead of asking a general, like, in pre-COVID times, the before times, as they say, and as you crazy kids say, you know, that, you know, hey, how are you doing? Versus, like, how are you doing today? Are you feeling okay? No. Or, like, how was your, you know, how was work? Or how was your day with, you know, your kid, your cat, etc. checking in, being more specific, and being a lot more empathic, and the compassion for humanity has come out more. And you see that come out in people more. And if they don't have any, you see that too. And unfortunately, that is a great indicator of how empathic somebody is and will be until obviously something changes them. But you see that obviously right now, nobody's having a good time. But with that lack of empathy, you can see how much that really does hurt now that you have all this perspective.
Yeah, I think that right now, and I love what you said about, yeah, just having, like, if you don't have empathy, then it's hard for you to have a perspective on, like, what's going on. Yeah, I think that compassion creates understanding. I think compassion is kind of just, like, patience and, you know, working to understand people. And if you don't understand them, at least, you know, having the ability to sympathize, or, you know, and not sympathize, but maybe just having the ability to just understand that they're suffering right now, and I try to compare, like, when someone's suffering, and if I don't understand it, just to, like, a time where I was suffering, and, you know, someone might not have understood me. And I try to just let them know that, like, hey, I'm here for you. I might not be the best person for you to talk to about this. And I, like, think about someone maybe that I know that they could talk to, or, like, give them someone, just because what advice could you give someone if you don't have, you know, perspective on it? So.
And especially since we pride ourselves as being better than animals, better than, you know, a lot of things. Humanity prides itself in that. What really differs, you know, us from a lot of beings and creatures is the ability to think rationally and to be compassionate. Animals will be compassionate, for example, to other animals that they're attached to. And sometimes they're attached to these animals for very specific reasons, you know, whether this animal provides them with food or, you know, protection. That's why they show compassion. But as if we're able to get past, like, the basic needs, the way that animals, the way that animals have been just kind of fighting their whole life to, like, make sure they're to eat, they reproduce, et cetera. If we've gotten past that, and if we're so advanced, then why is it bad to show compassion for our fellow humans? Like, we know that we can't do something without another person. Like, I don't care how self-sufficient a lot of people are, but someone, you know, someone ground the wheat to make the flour that you're using to make bread. Someone had to grow that wheat for other person to grind into making flour for you to make bread. Mm-hmm. Like, we all rely on each other. And with that compassion, that part of, again, a lot of beings, creatures don't have and aren't human, why don't we take pride in that right now when we're going under an issue that has been created by people like us in the first place? Like, we made a mess and we gotta take responsibility for it. But especially when we are aware that we need other people, we have to just put that in mind at the very least. And yeah, we're all stuck in our houses. We're all, like, boxed in different ways. But there's a lot of that we need to understand to be people at this point, to be better people.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people doing just a lot of, like, self-reflective work. I've noticed a lot of people just kind of doing more. Like, I've gotten to see a lot more of just, like, people I've been following, like, them doing their thing on Instagram. That's been pretty interesting. Like, oh, I've been following this person, and now they're doing a dance class. I'm still in bed, and I'm not going to dance with them, but I'm going to watch them do it.
Right.
Giving. There's a lot of people, out there giving, and a lot of compassion, like you're saying, is emerging from this. And, you know, I think that we're also waking up to the power, like, the true powers of, like, the internet and how much it connects us and how important it is. You know, I think that we finally see that now, like, oh, cool, like, we might be boxed in, but at least we have this, at least we have FaceTime, at least we have these certain ways that we can kind of, you know, be around someone or feel, you know, feel like we're close, you know, that closeness. And
right, and with the way that we're doing things now, we've been known as people to pretend we're somewhere between Luddites or, like, pro technology, like, sorry for really good. We've always been in the 2000s or so. Like, since then, we've kind of been in between both, like, oh, technology is bad, or, like, look what we can do with technology. But now more than ever, we're actually using technology, because before the COVID, we could still do virtual drinks. But now, since we're forced to, it's breaking us out of this idea that, oh, yeah, FaceTime, blah, 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 everything is terrible because you don't really get to see the person, blah, blah. But now we're seeing there is value to it. Yeah, it's not the same as being in person, but guess what? It's still just as valuable to be able to sit down and, you know, have a meal with somebody over your phone than to not at all, and to not get to know a person at all. And especially if it's someone that you care about, like people who are dating somebody who's living, you know, not with them, that's hard. But being able to do things like this does have that, a similar effect in that level of intimacy that they want, and understanding that, cool, there's a whole spectrum of stuff now that I understand. Now that I'm not seeing people in person, this is something that's important to me. So doing this with this person and doing this, this activity together is a way to get close and to be closer afterwards when this is all over, is appreciating that and understanding the value of that rather than going black and white that, oh, the only way to really get to know somebody is in person and technology is only to be used for, you know, just like important things and like talking to someone on the phone is never going to be as good as that, you know, all these critiques of technology itself rather than like the way we should be using technology, the way that our culture doesn't really know how to get at that level and meet people at a level they need to be to appreciate both technology and like in-person interactions.
Wow, I really love how mindful that was. Do you have a mindfulness practice? And if so, what is it?
I do. I try to... I know you're going to edit this too. But when you're a weird flex, I'm going to throw that in here. When I was a kid, I went back to Saigon to visit my family. And doing so, I got to meet some Buddhist monks that were in the area and that knew my family. And I was the one that, I was the American cousin that, you know, didn't really grow up with anyone else. So going there, I got to meet all these people, especially this monk who was curious about me, but not in a way that was, that was kind of paparazzi, like the rest of my family. Like, oh, oh my God, I heard American, you do this and that. Do you get like all the newest stuff on your phone? You know, questions like that. He asked more mindful questions of like, how are you doing? Like, does it feel different that now that you have so much family around you that you don't know versus family you do know? Questions like that. So what I've learned from them, from my own mindfulness practice, is that whatever I'm feeling, I should allow for myself to feel but not act upon it so quickly. Because feelings are just as important to express yourself, to stop yourself from actually doing any harm. Like if you have really pent up energy from anger, for example, if I didn't allow for myself to feel that and kind of push that down, that's going to explode later on. Like being able to handle yourself in a way that is healthy for you and to really take a look at what's bothering you. Like what is this anger really about? Mm-hmm. Like, well, I'm just angry today, not just because something set you off. And then there was a snowball effect. Like, why are you angry? Like I check in with myself in that way because no one can check in for me. I'm checking with myself. And the only people who are going to deal with that are people that I live with. Yeah. Okay, Jessica's angry. Why are they angry? Why is Jessica angry? Why are they angry? sorry, let me go back on that. I should say my name is Jay. Sorry, because yeah. But why are they angry? Why is Jay angry? Jay's angry because XYZ. And I check in with myself of like, I feel angry and I am angry right now because somebody crossed boundaries with me at work today. That's why I'm angry. But then understanding that, letting myself feel angry, but then checking myself, okay, that's why. Okay, cool. I'm not going to do anything further. Maybe there was a miscommunication that this was my boundary and this was crossed versus like, I'm angry. This person can go fuck themselves. I'm going to slash their tires. You know, that is not the way to go about it. So my mindfulness practices come from that of understanding and perspective, both mine and other people's and like the world's. Because like, if we're just angry and feeling self-righteous in our anger, it becomes destructive towards yourself and other people. Like, again, if I actually went and slashed my tires, I will definitely get written up and or fired if it's my coworker's tires I have slashed. That's not a good look and not a good feeling. and it doesn't help either because it just helps, attach that feeling and into this kind of cycle of constantly looking for kind of some kind of stimulation like that to be able to do this thing and then, like, go about it in that way. So for my mindfulness practice is always checking in with myself. Why am I feeling this way? It's okay to feel this way. Feel this feeling. You need to feel this feeling. You're a person. And then also checking in with why and with what did I want to do about it at that point. Like if I was really sad, why am I sad? Like, well, I'm feeling really upset today because I felt very ignored. Mm. So I was like, okay, I felt really ignored today. I'm going to feel that, but now I'm going to try to take care of it. Well, usually I don't feel ignored when my cat and I are hanging out and we're playing fetch. Play fetch with the cat. Kitty and I are happy. We snuggle. It's all good. And knowing that and knowing that about myself too. I'm like, all right, I should do that. Or this helps me feel better. And I'm glad this is something that I know I feel when X, Y, Z happens. So for me, my first practice usually comes from understanding myself, and especially right now in quarantine times, it kind of amplifies because you feel boxed in, you feel like there's no other way to distract yourself. So checking in mindfully for me has been with my actions and reactions to my emotions. So that's my mindfulness practice of like, don't get distracted, don't do these things, because right now is not the time, because everybody's under the same amount of pressure.
Wow, that's a really good mindfulness practice. Yeah, just being reflective and just taking a moment to pause. And I teach yoga, in our practice, there is a lot of pausing, at least in my practice, the practice that I teach. I just offer a lot of moments to pause and, yeah, just reflect, like, how are you feeling? Because so often we just go through the practice, we're like, do this, do that, yeah. Lift your leg, sweat. And it's like, but did you check in? Did you realize, did you learn anything new about how your body feels? Did you learn anything new about where you hold tensions? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that your mindfulness practice is pretty amazing. And I wanted to know more about, just about your upbringing and things like that. Tell us more about you.
I was born on a very mild autumnal night, September 2nd, in Boston, Massachusetts. I am the only child of immigrants. And I grew up with my entire maternal side, so everybody was older than me, which means everybody got to tell me what to do, which means that everybody had entitlement to their feelings and to be explosive and to be angry and to be destructive, and I had no say in it because I was the youngest. So my upbringing was a lot of that. So I pent up a lot of my feelings and had to like swallow my pride quite a bit, but also swallow how I was actually feeling. So being able to unravel that as I got older was a lot more difficult. And as an adult, I still am learning how to unravel these feelings because of all that. So a lot for myself to express that in different ways that's healthy, like writing, like even just jamming and making music. Even if it's not what people consider music, it's a lot of noise. That's way more constructive than, you know, holding grudges or just kind of like forcing your body to hold all this tension for no reason and like with no relief either. But it just ends up just kind of like swallowing you whole. And growing up too, like it was hard. Again, immigrant family, like we didn't have money, which means that I had a lot of pressure to do well in school, for example, to not look like the bad kid, you know, always on my toes because my family was being judged so hard already. That as an extension of that, like I was there, the only other thing that they couldn't control that they would try to kind of refine so that that nobody as a collective would get some kind of harassment of some kind. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Because I was the only child, my family wanted to make sure that I was always dotting my I's and crossing my T's because this is, me as a person, this is an extension of who we are. And so we have a lot of pressure to look good, to not be problematic, to not cross the line because of the way that, American prejudice against non-white immigrants are. Mm. You know, we always have to do that. So as somebody who always had to deal with like familial dynamics and then the political dynamics of that, it was hard. I'm like, I can't really express myself. You know, I shouldn't swear. I shouldn't be the bad kid. I shouldn't give anybody an inkling to think I would be doing something wrong or want to do something wrong. And so that all of that upbringing has really led me to, to try to want to understand fully what all this is and what all these feelings are. Why am I doing this? What is this? Because if I was always told no, to not feel these things, to shut your mouth, to not talk back, to don't look at an adult unless, you know, you're being told what to do, you know, et cetera. Like there's a lot that goes unanswered in terms of why. Mm. Like,
yeah.
And so my upbringing was a lot of discipline. I was not allowed to have friends as a child, really. Like, I was told to kind of study to get ahead. Even in summers, I'd be reading, like far above grade level, because you can't look like the dumb kid. You can't be the bad kid. You have to know. You have to be all the person that knows how to get through this.
Wow.
Because you have nobody else to help you. Yeah, it was really hard. Again, immigrant parents, like, English is not their first language. Who's gonna teach you if you don't teach yourself? Because we obviously can't. You have to be better. You have to do twice as good. Like, you have no reason not to. You can't go anywhere, because if you have no distractions, you have no reasons to fall behind.
Wow. So you must work very good under pressure then.
I work okay, I guess.
Well, I just say that, I guess, just because I feel that, yeah, I had a lot of pressure kind of to do good in school too, but from a different perspective, I guess. My mother took us out of the hood, so that was like a similar thing where we were like, not that we were immigrants, but like, in a way, we were traveling, you know, somewhere far and somewhere distant. So,
a stranger in a strange land. It's a feeling that we all can understand at some point in our life.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, there's just like a shift that happened, and we were, I grew up basically on Long Island, and I was born in Albany. But my parents were from, they were from like New York City, Brooklyn. And I guess we lived in the hood in Albany too. So after they left Brooklyn, they went to the hood of Albany. And then they left the hood of Albany and we came to Long Island, and it was a similar, just kind of do good in school. But there wasn't like a, I don't know, there was like pressure to do good in school, but also like my parents had a lot of shit to unpack too. As you know, my mom had me at 17, so very young, and just I'm sure that's like a whole different, you know, there's a lot that goes into even that. So it's very interesting though, just to see kind of, I mean, just the, yeah, I've learned to work good under pressure. I think also though, just mostly from kind of living on my own and moving out and wanting to get so far away from living at home and being around, you know, that much pressure and that much stress. And she definitely put a lot of her like stresses and all the things that, you know, she went through at the time on me. But, you know, it was a process of unlearning and relearning. And now like me and my mom are like really close. We do yoga together. I'm helping her with her like business, like, our whole relationship just like did a 360, and a lot of that came from compassion and on my side, you know, and patience, and just kind of, you know, taking the time to just have faith and, you know, is that you?
Yep, I'm so sorry. No, you're good. Someone's definitely ordering food. but yeah, it's great still how in New York City you can still get stuff whenever. Especially now with a lot of queers who are making their own food businesses. I saw somebody who was making vegan meals and delivering them. And I was like, the way for them to get money, it's like cheaper than takeout food, and it's healthier. And it's like, you know, it's somebody who also, you know, has been working at kitchens and lost their job. So it's seeing a lot of like innovative stuff like that in terms of not only compassion, but just being able to help somebody out. And especially a lot of people who are doing a lot of these kind of food businesses now on the fly are also donating a lot of these to essential workers. And I really admire that, because they don't have to, because they're not doing so hot either. But the fact that they're willing to do that for healthcare workers and people who are in position of you know, being the front with them in this situation, it is really great to see that level of compassion. Because it's so easy, especially people with working class, like POC people, et cetera, to say, you know, oh, you're hurting, but I'm hurting worse. I don't care about what you have to say. It's too easy to do that. It's way too easy to do that. But that's the thing. If you're in the same boat, then you can't really be mad at someone else's, you know, not doing this. If you're in a different position and you're coming from a different perspective, there can be some kind of argument there of like, okay, you have it better, or et cetera, et cetera. But if we're all in the same boat, what good is it going to do to tell somebody it's not?
Yeah.
express how they're feeling, or I'm having it worse than you. Like when, well, if you're having it worse than me, why don't we have a conversation about bringing you closer to where I am so that you're not as hurt right now? Like that can be the next conversation. Expressing yourself before and I'm yeah, I'm not having a good time. Don't use that as a means to attack somebody else. Say, I'm not having a good time. And again, the undertone of all that is, I need help.
Mm-hmm.
So if you bring it up to the conversation of, yeah, I'm not doing so great because I need help, guess what? Then you can have the conversation of how to do that.
Yeah, I think communication is so important, especially when, I'm sure you know that because you live in a collective house, right?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Yeah, so do I. And
queer collective houses.
Yeah, my queer collective house is going through a shift actually right now, and what's happening is that the people that own the land here are actually working to transfer it over to make this a QT POC house in West Philadelphia. That's like a land trust, so basically like no one could ever sell the land here. And it's really cool that I get to be one of the people that's a part of it. Yeah, this collective is going through a transition right now. I don't really know what's to come in the future, but for now, there's definitely I'm learning a lot, you know, just from being kind of trapped in the house. And, you know, my roommates are both white folks, and we have, you know, there's just a lot of things that I need to bring to their attention, and sometimes it takes a lot of my energy, you know, to, express to them, hey, this and this and this, and, yeah, I've noticed myself get to points, Jay, where I'm I'm just gonna, ignore, I'm not gonna talk today, and, I can't do that just because naturally, I just... You know, I can tell when someone wants to talk to me, and I just have that compassion in my heart, and, you know, eventually talk to them, and I'm like, hey, this is what happened, and we live together, and I'm just going to tell you this, and it's hard, but it's teaching me a lot, because also, I didn't grow up learning how to communicate, you know, how I'm feeling, or learning how to, you know, I was always told to be quiet, and I'm sure you've had the same experience. Be quiet, stay in your place, stay in a child's place, and it's
being not heard.
Mm-hmm. And now I am so heard. And it can get you in trouble, but you know what? It's worth it because, you know, we've been silent for so long, and people start to shake up when we speak because, you know, they're not used to us standing our ground, and here we are standing our ground, so.
Right. And especially since, I'm gonna bring something up. This is I feel like this is a very POC mom, but you ever get that moment where your mom, where you're like, Mom, I want Wendy's, and she's getting, what, you got McDonald's money, you got Wendy's money, and then be quiet for a moment.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
That is such a mode.
that is period. My mom said it, again, in various languages, both languages, Vietnamese and English, would be like, well, Mom, I want Burger King. You got Burger King money? I don't think you do. If you want that, you can go get it yourself, but I don't want it. So no Burger King money if you want me to get it.
My grandmother was the opposite. My grandmother would get us anything we wanted.
We'd be like,
we want Burger King. We wouldn't even have to say it. We just look at it. And she'd be like, all right, here we go.
right. And that's the thing, too. There's so much to the joy of being a grandparent, so that you can do that. So you can show that old compassion. Yeah, you don't have to deal with the consequences, but being able to spot that more now that you have more perspective. And me growing up in a place like that and then living in a collective house that me, my friends, and my partners have put together has been so important because we all do our own thing, but it doesn't feel like we have boundaries as roommates of oh, we're not going to chit chat when we're when we see each other or somebody's cooking, you know, why would you need to be in the kitchen if you're not cooking, you know, that kind of this less direct functional kind of capitalist way of going about things. We don't do that. We just kind of sit, we hang, this is our space, we can do our thing. If you know, if you don't like what's going on, you can always say something about it, or you can remove yourself from the situation, et cetera, versus like, you know, don't be putting your nasty feet up on my couch, you know. It's everybody's couch. It's everybody's couch. If you don't like that, you can say something like, hey, I see your feet looking a little grody right now. Can we keep that off the couch so everyone's not dealing with that? Sure. Sorry about that. And that's it. End of conversation. and that's just also being mindful. Like, oh, I didn't even notice. Like, understanding other people's perspectives, and maybe this person doesn't know, or this person is feeling this way, but now voicing it vocally, more direct with it, rather than just giving somebody like the stink eyes. Like, this is the way to live your life.
Yeah, you tapped into a secret. Yeah. You tapped into a secret that mindfulness creates awareness.
Right. And like, if you really want to be, you know, somebody's friend, be close to somebody, there can't be this misconstrued, like, understanding of something. Like, or at least you do your best to clarify, because then you really get to know that person rather than like an illusion that's been put in front of you. And sometimes I have moments where I realize, oh shit, I didn't mean it like that. And then I say it immediately because I rather look silly for 2 seconds of like, oh, I didn't mean it like that, than look like somebody that would prefer awful things to happen. Like that, and again, like I did drama in high school, so I have no shame. So that means I will say anything to clarify myself, even if I do look stupid. I don't care. Again, no sense of shame. Like, oh shit, I didn't mean that. I'm gonna keep swearing in front of your mom by accident until right now. There you go. And that's happened to me before too, where I'm like, oh, I mean, sorry, Mrs.
Oh man, yeah, I try to stay away from parents because I'm really bad at them.
Parents love me, but I can never tell if they're cool with maybe swearing or mentioning certain things. But I guess me understanding that, like, I try to post that to make sure, you know, people aren't uncomfortable with that, like my friend's parents or like the parents themselves, like just posting that and understanding that perspective where I don't have to be all entitled to making somebody feel uncomfortable. Like, well, we live in New York City, you don't expect me to swear. It's like, oh, they don't have to. Like, they're gonna be in this close personal space of mine. Of course I should make my guests feel comfortable.
Yeah, honestly, I think living in like other cities besides New York City makes me want to swear. I mean, if I'm driving in New York City, I want to swear, but most of the time when I'm in New York City, I just want to like, I don't know. I just want to, like, look cute. I want to walk around. I want to go get my nail. I want to just do all these, like, I guess I'll swear, but, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm mostly cursing when I'm, like, in a city and I can't get around. I'm like, fuck, I gotta walk, or fuck.
Yeah, I mean, again, coming from Massachusetts, a lot of, with all my working class, like, hardiness, that's what I do. I can swear like a trucker, but I'll also make you a really filling bowl of New England clam chowder. Not Manhattan, New England clam chowder. I don't put tomatoes in that. You know, and there you go. There's that and that. And then, you know, I can also send you home with a little bit of my homemade apple cider vinegar. So I'm good.
You sound really sweet. How can folks, like, follow you, your projects, what you're doing? How can folks stay in touch with you? Are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram. My Instagram handle is bitten.exe. The main thing I do there is mostly showcase what I'm doing, maybe send pictures of my very cute cats and my very polyamorous lifestyle of like, these are the people I care about. We're doing the thing. I tend to experiment with a bit of everything. So when I say I experiment, I legitimately mean that. I've done nothing but make stories my whole life. Being a storyteller has been exactly what I do. I've done drama in terms of competing in theater. I've been the actor, I've been the director, I've been the writer. I also do music, like the same. I am also experimenting with more like DJ stuff, so maybe that might be coming up soon. I tend to update that on my Instagram, whether that is, you know, something I'm doing with somebody. I did a play with somebody here in Brooklyn, Ashley Rogers. It's part of her Scowl series where it's queer stories, but with wrestling. And so we were about to release Ladder-Mageddon, but that did not come out because of COVID. So you can fight for your rights in whatever spandex you'd like. And that would be a show that you should see if you like that. What else do I do? I also make a lot of stuff. So I am, again, very New England. I make soap, incense, candles.
Oh,
I make
wow.
a lot of food stuff. So I ferment. So it's always alive with me. vinegar, kimchi, veganized everything. My next move that may be coming to an Instagram of mine near you. Looking at making some more gourmet vegan versions of cheeses, like a sharp cheddar, a nice like a Rochefort blue cheese, and experimenting with that.
Wow, you are fancy too. Okay, yes. Well, New England.
Sometimes fancy. Yeah, sometimes fancy, but most of the time making hand sanitizer, keeping the world safe, and running around with my cats, I guess.
Yeah, you're making hand sanitizer. Tell us some more about that.
Oh shit, you want to hear the full lockdown on this? So, yeah, making hand sanitizer is really important right now, obviously, and we've been gearing up a lot for production in terms of making it, and the main component is alcohol. Yeah, alcohol is ethanol, and it is something that is flammable and very toxic, henceforth, it is a hazardous material. People have been making their own, and production has been gearing up so high that we're actually... I'm not sure in terms of country what we should be doing about the alcohol, because it's the production of it is so toxic. The plants have to like obviously make sure that they keep them a certain quota to not, you know, destroy the land around them and the people around them and the people who are like creating and co-working within that space.
Wow.
And so making hand sanitizer is, again, a big business, but it's so hard because right now we're actually having trouble getting just alcohol from suppliers. And making hand sanitizer, there's so many different ways to do it, but we've been kind of brainwashed into our lingo of thinking Purell is the main thing. Purell is a gel hand sanitizer, kind of like with Band-Aids. Band-Aid is technically a plaster, like whatever, like medical whatever plaster, but Band-Aid is like the corporate kind of like brand. And so the kind that we make is not gel, but it is hand sanitizer. It's just more liquidy, so you just spray more. And so... That's the tea. Now everybody's doing their own versions of that and understanding, holy shit, like Purell hand sanitizer as a gel hand sanitizer. So if I make some, it's not kind of quite like that. But the important thing is that it is antibacterial.
Yeah. So is there a certain percentage that we want our alcohol to be for our hand sanitizers?
Yes. There's FDA regulations now for that. I think it's like 70%. It has to be 70% ethanol alcohol to be sold as hand sanitizer or to qualify as that, because that is the highest, that is the minimum I think you can do to make sure that the antibacterial properties are happening on the skin, on the membrane, the oils, whatever, the hands. That is what's going to be valid as such as that. So kind of like with anything else, the FDA has to be a certain amount that qualifies as if this would be beneficial at this point.
Well, thank you so much for doing all that work for, you know, the world and for taking the time out to, you know, come on the podcast and share your light. I really love your energy, and you have a great sense of humor, even in light of all that you told me that you've been through. And I really had a great time getting to know you on the podcast.
Well, thank you for reading my request and reading into the office. Enthusiasm I had for being on here, and we should talk more after this, and that'd be great to do. So we're not that far away, and especially after this, Philadelphia is what, a 2-hour bus ride away?
Yeah, I definitely love to connect.
You can come over, and I've got like all the vinegars and kimchi and veganized stuff.
Oh my god,
vegan friendly stuff, because I make all the things. So I'm not vegan, but I have a lot of friends and lovers who are. And so being able to know all that is great, because then you can also make an amazing like ricotta pizza and trick people, because it's actually super healthy and it's just like cashew nuts and like spinach and like carrots.
Oh my god. Like, I'm going to come to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I'm going to come to Brooklyn. You're going to take my heart.
I'm going to totally spoil. Food is such a big part of like working class and like POC culture that I know. Like, get them where it really hurts, right in the stomach. They can never have another pizza again unless it's my pizza. Or like slow cooked stews that I make are to die for, because I've got an Instant Pot, and the Instant Pot's also remote Wi-Fi control, so that means I can saute and then right into the slow cook for a nice, like, chunky beef stew.
Oh, my God.
Or if you're vegan, a seitan stew with lots of mushroom umami in it. Mm.
Ooh, yes. I love umami. I made, well, I don't know. It didn't come out as I wanted it to. I made, like, a flax egg type sauce thing, and I put tofu inside the sauce, and I think if I would have baked the tofu and then, like, cooked the sauce, because the sauce gets, like, kind of, like, I don't know, when you cook, like, flax egg stuff, it gets, like, really thick, it gets really thick, and, like...
Yeah, it gets really gritty, because it's grain, and especially since it's, what, like, 2 tablespoons of water to 1 tablespoon of, like, flax seed egg, it, like, can get really gloopy if it gets really hot.
Yeah, it gets really goopy. I was like, this looks like cheese right now. I was like, if I had, like, things to make it look like cheese, I was like, I don't have these things right now.
Oh, if you were in Brooklyn, I was thinking, this is another thing I was thinking, too. If I got really good at making vegan cheeses, I should make that something that people can get locally for me. Like, I think that'd be really cool, especially for people who maybe can't get stuff. I can definitely be the person to make it worth their while, because, I mean, if you're quarantining already, wouldn't it be nice to pick up, like, some fancy blue cheese, because you can make it really rich and creamy and, like, put that sauce in maybe some crackers, and it's all, like, nice, you know, nicer protein to your body, like, more nuts and all that rather than dairy. And then you have the option of dairy if not, and that I think that would be really nice, because finding comfort right now is, like, the best thing to do, not to really punish yourself and say, oh, I have to do this or that, like, treat yourself every once in a while for something nice, but especially if it's also secretly nutritious for your body. Like,
yes, like, go get that vegan pie. You see it, get it, eat it. It's okay. You did it. Guess what? Mm-hmm. It's all right. It made you feel good. You needed something to feel good. It's all right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just made, I finally got my hands on some Vital Wheat gluten, so I've been making so many things with that, because now I'm just, like, taking my time to use all my cooking and baking skills and everything I've learned from British Bake Off to, you know, make sure everything tastes good. I've made some vegan steaks. I just made some vegan chicken nuggets that I've, like, fried and stuff in some nice flavoring oils, and I froze that to, you know, have a snack later. What else did I make with the vegan?
It's snack time. I think we're talking about snacks now because it's tourist season and we're just, like, we're ready.
That's not good. Like, I think that's, like, really great too, because now I can make a lot of my comfort foods and not worry about, like, getting stuff or it's spoiling. Isn't that great? Like, I mean, like, sometimes you do want fried chicken sandwiches, right? And you can't go get it all the time. And you can make a nice faux KFC chicken sandwich.
Oh my goodness.
The little chicken. And those are chicken little sandwiches are so great. And sometimes I don't have all the stuff, but hey, I have a seasoning for it. You bet your sweet ass, and you're deep frying that seitan chicken in there.
I just found out that you could deep fry in a pot. My roommate's like,
oh yes, you can.
I was like, what are y'all doing? And they put, like, oil in this pot, and they just put the damn falafel balls in there. They're making homemade falafel, and I was like, oh, I've never. All right, now I can deep fry things. I don't really ever deep fry, but.
You should, once you master deep frying, you should learn the art of Korean fried chicken double frying, because I'm trying to do that, adapt that to the seitan that I have. And again, I know how to do it with real chicken, obviously, so when you fry it twice, then when you fry something twice, it still has that, like, crunch to it a day after, even if you leave it in the fridge. And I'm trying to perfect that and figure out how to do that with the seitan, because it's not meat, but not quite dry like that. So figuring that out is my next step, my next experiment, my next frontier, Korean fried chicken.
Well, I hope you let me know what happens next, and I hope we can have you on the podcast again soon.
I'd love to, and I'll be watching. I'll see if you're around Brooklyn once this is all over.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I will be. Me and my partner love coming.
And I will. Perfect. I will hit you up, / you will hit me up, and we'll do the thing. And also getting into drinks, because that's 100% vegan. We don't put the eggs or whatever you need for whiskey sours and fancy cocktails like that in. So making some jams and preserves, getting the syrup out of there and then making fancy drinks.
Let's do it. Well, I hope you have a great night. And yeah, thank you again so much for being on the podcast. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to QT Pock Talks. My name is Owl Rare, and we'll see you again soon.
See you soon. Bye.